This is the Pure Green Podcast, episode 17. This week, I'm pleased to be talking with Erin Boyle of the blog Reading My Tea Leaves. Could you imagine living in 240 square feet? Probably not. And yet, this is exactly what Erin and her husband James did for several years. The most remarkable bit? It was beautiful, simple, and organized. Her tiny space led her to create a column called Life in a Tiny Apartment, which helped propel her online space into a full-time career and helps us all realize that all we need, in fact, is less. In this interview, Erin shares her story and how to live a minimal, organized, and beautiful life. I'm Celine McKay, and you're listening to the Pure Green Podcast. Thanks for joining me for another episode of the podcast. It was a real pleasure talking with Erin for this interview. We've worked together in the past on features for the magazine, but we've never really connected for such a long chat, and it was a real treat to get to know her better. I've long admired Erin. Her blog is an absolute pleasure to read. She's matter-of-fact, which I find nice, and the advice she shares for living in a small space is extremely thoughtful and insightful. In the episode, I joke that she is the Martha Stewart of small space living, but really, it's no joke. She totally is. Erin also writes from a core belief in living naturally and sustainably, and it's lovely to know that she is sharing products and ideas with a wide readership that promotes this lifestyle. In this world, we all live surrounded by clutter, urge to buy more and have more, and our homes is where it ends up, and then we feel overwhelmed. To Erin, this just doesn't resonate, and she shares a lot of advice on how to embrace minimalism. She comments that being hyper-organized and somewhat Spartan is a conscious lifestyle choice because it reduces stress. Ever waste 20 minutes looking for that thing that you just can't remember where you left it? This just doesn't happen in Erin's world. Sure, it requires discipline, but the results are worth it. I think deep down, we all crave a little more simplicity. Erin also recently became a mother and moved from her 240 square foot apartment to a whopping 400 square foot apartment, which, as she puts it, feels positively palatial. I was very curious to follow Erin's journey into motherhood and see how she would apply her values on minimalism and organization to raising a child. Erin is truly an inspiration in this area, helping us all realize that we aren't doing our kids any favors by lavishly spoiling them with toys. She also writes about natural parenting and is a fantastic resource for non-toxic toys and other baby-related topics. We talk about all this and more in the interview, but one of the things I loved most about Erin is that all of this doesn't feel extraordinary to her. It just feels logical and normal. Finally, because this interview went over an hour, we're trying something new and released both an extended and shortened version of this episode. You're listening to the extended version. You can find the shortened cut at puregreenmag.com/podcast or on iTunes. All right, let's go to the interview. Here's Erin. First of all, Erin, I wanted to say thank you so much for coming on to the podcast. I really appreciate it. I'm very excited to talk to you about your lifestyle and some of the things that you've been doing.
Thank you. I'm good to talk with you.
So I wanted to open things by providing a little context by asking you, what does the word minimalism represent to you?
Gosh, good question. It's such a loaded word, isn't it? And I feel like it's become even more so. You know, there's the kind of, you know, like minimalism with capital M. And then I feel like what I, you know, practice, to some extent, I've realized in writing more about it, a lot of it kind of for me has happened accidentally. You know, it wasn't even incredibly intentional in the beginning. It's just kind of my habit to, you know, only buy what I need and to kind of think carefully about those purchases. And that's kind of been, you know, has grown over time. But I feel like it's really just about having what you need and kind of being comfortable, with what you have, which is a, you know, for someone who's writing in an online space and being kind of bombarded by all sorts of things that you could have, it's kind of a challenge sometimes. But it goes back to kind of when I started writing my blog. You know, I was 24, and I started a series called My Week in Objects, mostly, which I still write. And it was kind of a reaction, in fact, to feeling like in the blog sphere, there was so much emphasis on introducing products and new things that were, it was exciting, but it also made me sometimes feel sad, you know, like, oh, I can't have that beautiful thing because I'm 24 and I work and get paid, you know, minimum wage, whatever. And so I started the series to kind of be able to celebrate the things that I did have. And I continue to do that. And now, you know, I'm 30 and feel kind of grown up in a lot of ways. And have, you know, access to things in a different way than I did then, certainly. But, yeah, I think it's minimalism is about kind of taking stock of what you have and celebrating it without necessarily needing to grow it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I appreciate what you said earlier about it being a loaded word, because I agree. It's like many things in what I do and talk about, you know, sustainability and all of those things. It's sort of wrapped up in the same kind of arena because it feels polarizing. It feels as though you're rejecting other people's lifestyles in favor of this one, which you perceive to be better, which isn't true. It's just, you know, how it can be perceived. So, you know, it can be a tricky place to be for sure.
Yeah.
But I'm curious to know. So what came first, your desire to live more simply or life in a 240 square foot apartment?
You know, I just was writing about this week, and I do think that our ability to live in 240 square foot apartment was a result of the lifestyle that we'd already been creating to some extent. You know, it didn't require, certainly there were some things like not every piece of furniture we had could squeeze into that space. So we, you know, sold some stuff and kind of swapped other things out to make them fit in a smaller space. But in general, you know, we were already kind of living this, you know, simple life to some extent. I'm uncomfortable a little bit with the idea that it's so simple. I mean, we don't live in a mud hut, you know, like we're surrounded by beautiful things that I'm very, you know, grateful to have. But I do think that it was kind of already a lifestyle that we had embraced, where we weren't kind of consuming an enormous amount of things that led us to be able to live in that space. And I think moving a lot also has helped. I mean, I've been writing about in the book how when you move, when you're renting and you're kind of, you know, we moved for school twice and we moved for jobs and we, you know, lived in kind of a large number of apartments in a small number of years. And when you move, the things that you own are literal weights that you have to carry. Mm-hmm. So that kind of also helped. Like, we had never really accumulated an enormous number of things. And so it made moving into a small space possible without a huge overhaul needing to happen.
Okay. So, I mean, that's definitely true what you said about objects being literal weights. I think that's true in so many ways. But for you, it was literally like heavy things you had to move all the time. So you had moved around a lot, which sort of laid the groundwork for, you know, for living in this small space. But then this was the smallest space that you lived in, and you stayed in there. You stayed there for quite a while, right? So you liked it.
We did, yeah. I mean, we were fine. We, you know, sometimes it was annoying to sleep in a loft where you couldn't sit up, you know, or stand up, and you couldn't, you know, stand up to make the bed or whatever. Mm-hmm. There are definitely some things about that space that we're trying, and now that we're in a larger space, it's certainly easier in some respects. But we were fine. We were comfortable. We could afford our rent. We were living in a beautiful neighborhood, And it worked. It worked for us. So there wasn't really a need to change until we were having a baby and, you know, didn't want to be kind of carrying a newborn up a ship's ladder and back down again.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure that brought in a lot more challenges, which I'm definitely going to ask you about a little later on. But I wanted to keep sort of the focus on this tiny apartment just for a little tiny bit longer, because I think it's just so fascinating. I think for most people, it's like unfathomable. I mean, that's probably the size of most people's living room or their master bedroom and their bathroom included, you know, like, and so I think there's a bit of that, you know, I don't want to say sensationalism, but kind of, you know, that shock factor that people are like, oh my goodness. And then they look at everything that you accomplished in that space, and it flips a switch, kind of, at least for me. So I wanted to ask you, you know, as you said, there were plenty of obstacles and difficulties when you first made this transition, but were there facets of living with less that were surprisingly easy? And then on the flip side, were there difficulties that surprised you?
I mean, I think we still had our creature comforts. You know, we had bathtub and a shower and a stove and an oven and a refrigerator and kitchen cabinets, like things that, and a toilet, you know, like we had all of the things that you kind of might check off as like most necessary. And so I think, you know, it's not as though we were living where we had to like haul water from a well a mile away. Like, we really,
yeah,
you know, had,
of course,
had the things that we needed. So I think in that sense, there weren't huge challenges. I mean, I think one of the biggest challenges, and it sounds kind of silly, but was the bed situation, you know, like needing to kind of scramble up a ladder to the bed and back down again was just a little bit annoying. Like, it just kind of grated on you a little bit. You felt like in the morning there wasn't kind of like a, oh, wake up and start the day by, you know, you kind of like started the day in this little cave a little bit. And apartment, despite the fact that I was able, it got like 2 hours of sunlight a day. And during those 2 hours, it was glorious and beautiful and very bright. And the rest of the time, it was very dark. There's just one window, so, you know, one exposure, and buildings around. So when the sun kind of went past a certain spot, the sun would go down. And that was actually much more of a challenge for me than the space. I mean, having kind of darkness for a lot of the day in that apartment, especially while I was working there, working from the apartment, and, you know, living there, obviously, that was definitely much more of a challenge than the space ever was. But in terms of, you know, we have this bigger apartment now, and we basically have all, you know, with a few exceptions, we have the same things in this apartment that we had in the other apartment. So it's not as though we really had to go without, you know, we still have a tiny couch, although now we have another little bench also. But, you know, there wasn't kind of anything huge that we missed being there. And in fact, like, it was kind of nice to just have this one cozy space, you know, to call our own. I don't know. I mean, for us, honestly, it was not a huge, huge adjustment. And I think part of the reason is that it wasn't a story of like excess to going from a place of excess to a place of minimalism, really. It was really just the square footage that changed. Does that make sense?
Yes, no, it does. And I think that's a good point, actually, to sort of emphasize that you weren't going from one extreme to another. It was just a bit, you know, one more stop sort of on your evolution.
Right.
And I can totally appreciate how that lack of sunshine is a challenge. Yeah. I mean, for me, too. That's like my number one thing, is sunlight. Okay. It just influences my mood. Like, it's so important.
I know, me too.
Yeah. So, you know, I wanted to ask you as well about, about your systems for organization, because I sort of think that when people think of minimalism, they think of the excess, like you just said. So, you know, like trimming off the fat, so that the extra decorative items or that extra pair of shoes, you know, but the truth is that it's an all-encompassing lifestyle. And so I'm always blown away personally by how much stuff we accumulate, you know, even things that have a so-called purpose,
right?
You know, so that we keep it around. So like I'm thinking like kitchen equipment or books, yeah, bathroom stuff, you know, but it takes up so much room, which you literally did not have.
Right.
And I mean, your new place, which I'll talk about in a bit, it has 400 square feet, but that's still really small. So I'd love to hear more about your organization systems. So how did you deal with the major clutter magnets like kitchens, bathrooms, and closets, as an example?
Well, I mean, I think part of this always goes back to editing your thing. So for me, I would so much rather have... Okay, I'll go back to this kind of... a little bit of a strange example that might not be a cultural reference point for most listeners, but growing up, I absolutely loved the movie Sarah Plain and Tall, which is, you know, based on the book by Patricia McLaughlin, and Glenn Close was in it, and it's this movie about this woman who goes, she's from Maine, and she goes to live with this family. The specifics don't really matter. There's this one silly scene that probably no one who ever watched the movie ever noticed, but she goes to get, and you know, I might even be misremembering it, but there's a scene with a train ticket and a drawer, and she opens the drawer, someone opens the drawer, and inside this dresser drawer, there's like a pair of gloves, a handkerchief, and a train ticket, or maybe the train ticket's gone, I can't remember, but almost nothing in the drawer. And that scene, for whatever reason, ever since I was a little girl, I like loved that idea of a drawer that just had like a very few things in it. That wasn't kind of this drawer that you like pulled open after like trying to like stick your fingers in and put the ruler down or the pens that were sticking up so you couldn't get the drawer open. I just loved this kind of idea of the drawer only having these very few things. And that kind of like Spartan scene just, it appeals to me for whatever reason, and it really is kind of on this gut level. Like for me, I just kind of relish having only what I need, so I kind of start from there. So I, you know, if I get, for instance, like another, and for a while it was actually a little bit hard because I was accumulating things through like prop styling kinds of assignments. So it would be like, oh, well, like just buy this new set of napkins. And I was like, oh God, another set of napkins. Like, where am I going to put this set of napkins? I would rotate out. So I would say like, okay, well, I have these new napkins. So these old ones that are admittedly kind of stained or tattered, like I'll move those into the rag pile. And so I definitely kind of always try to keep that, that like, you know, one thing in, one thing out kind of system. And then, you know, I just always have a place for things. So in terms of organizing, specifically, I feel like I am just, I like kind of that ritual of returning things to a place where they were. And, you know, I was just actually writing about how I myself have this kind of ritual with my daughter's toys, where like at the end of each week, I kind of go through her little box of toys and like organize them. And it just feels like kind of calming and nice to kind of get things back nice and neat and tidy. So that's kind of what I would do. I just kind of kept things, kept returning things to their place. I think part of it is just I don't really have a consumer impulse. So I wasn't like buying an enormous amount of things I then had to find a place for. And when I was given things, I was pretty ruthless about, like, is this something that I love? Is this something that I can use? If it is, then I'm going to keep it. And if it's not, then I'm not going to keep it. And that I think is something that takes a little bit of, you know, learning to say, like, not everything that I'm given I need to necessarily keep, because you can only control, you know, you can control your own kind of habits, but it's harder to control. You can't control everything, you know, so some things just kind of accumulate or would accumulate if you didn't kind of put on the brakes a little bit. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And I, the first thought that sort of sprang in my mind when you were talking about, you know, a Spartan existence and loving that things have a place and that you can just put that thing back in its place and that feels so satisfying, you know, for me is like, oh, you know what, that is just so much easier in a way, because how often do you run around the house trying to find that one thing and you open drawers and it's like overflowing with pens, it's not in there, and you have to like rummage through like, you know, your whole house before you find that one thing that you're looking for, and that wastes a lot of time and energy. So, you know, I can definitely understand the appeal, but it sort of sounds like it's a bit hardwired for you too, part of your personality, which makes it a bit easier.
Well, I think that that's probably true. And there were certainly, you know, because I don't live by myself and I didn't live by myself in that tiny apartment. And there were definitely moments where I was like, James, you know, how could you have, like, he has this shoebox and it was filled with like, we called it like James's box, and it was filled with like random stuff. So it would be, there were like snapshots. So there were like, you know, like pictures from that he would like had toted around with him in college and after college. But there were also like, there was an external hard drive and there were a few random cords and there was like a piece of coral from a beach somewhere. And there was like all this just like random stuff. And it kind of drove me crazy that he had this box, but it was also kind of like, I could separate that. I was like, you know what? That is your thing. You got that. It was like a box from climbing shoes. It was this like climbing shoe cardboard box that he like toted from apartment to apartment, but it was his deal. Like, and that was his stuff, and it was a total mess. But, you know, it kind of lived under the bed, and he, when, you know, if he wanted to rummage through it to try to find something, like, he could do that. So, I mean, I think you have to like kind of balance a little bit. Like, you don't want to kind of spend your time, like, there are more important things than just worrying about the organization of your home.
Yeah.
I think that kind of, if you can establish a kind of system, then you actually don't spend as much time worrying about those things, and there is actually more time to do other things, like, you know, I don't know, make dinner or go out for a walk or whatever kind of like your average daily habits are. I don't know. I do think that there's some value in kind of maintaining order to leave room for other things.
Yeah. So, I mean, I do too, for sure. And I think that if all he had was a shoebox, you're doing pretty good.
I know.
Yeah, that's awesome. But, you know, it did bring a question to my mind is, you know, around the idea of bringing your family or people in your life on board with living this way. And did you find that hard, or was James kind of into it too, outside of his box?
Yeah, outside of the box. No, he was definitely into it. You know, because like I said, it wasn't the most drastic change for us. The biggest change was just like the literal square footage. Like, oh my gosh, you're here right next to me, and that's the only place you can be, because that's the only place there is for the two of us. Like, we were definitely in closer proximity than we'd ever been before. There's like no bedroom door to slam, or, you know, in the apartment that we were in right before this one, there was actually like a whole attic loft space where we had our, you know, quote unquote offices. And, and, you know, we didn't have any of that anymore. So like, that was definitely a challenge for us, you know, as individuals. And I do think like, to some extent, there was some, in terms of this stuff accumulation, like, there was some needing to really explain to family and friends, like, we love you, but we do not need another, you know, throw pillow or whatever. Like, we literally don't have room for it. There is this, like, I think that's a big challenge in terms of maintaining your space, and even just living purposefully in a space, is like, we are not single actors. Like, there are all sorts of influences and family and friends and people who also have stuff and unload that stuff on you too. And like trying to figure out a way to like be gracious and accept gifts, you know, warmly at the same time that you say like, oh, please don't give us another whatever because we don't have space for it. Like, that was a challenge. And in some ways, actually, I have to say, it allowed for it. Like, when you only live in 240 square feet, you can kind of use that as an excuse. You know, you can say like, oh, you know, at Christmas time or whatever, like, you know, whatever you do, just don't give us anything because there's just no room for it. Whereas then you move into a bigger space and you no longer have that excuse necessarily. But I do think it was hard for other people to necessarily understand how it could be that you just literally didn't have the space for something. Yeah,
that can definitely imagine how that would be hard. Because I mean, giving a gift is, you know, there's a lot of emotion and sentiment tied up in that. And so I imagine that you guys, your families were like, oh, we have to buy a gift for Erin. What are we gonna do? So what did they?
She doesn't want anything.
Yeah. So I mean, the way I always default to giving experiences instead, so like tickets to a show or a gift certificate to your favorite restaurant or something like that. I mean, there's other ways to provide meaning outside of objects, right?
Exactly. Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. So in this has got me thinking as well about, you know, when you mentioned a little bit about letting go of things. And then I just brought it up with the sentimentality of something. And in our recent podcast with Madeline Somerville, who wrote a book called Living with Less, and that's what the interview was about.
Yeah.
You know, she mentioned that our identities are so tightly tied to our stuff, as is, you know, evidenced by James and his box of things that to him are very meaningful. And so what about when an object crosses over from its beauty or purpose and into the realm of sentimentality? I mean, what about your favorite books or photos of, you know, printed photographs or whatever it might be, you know, something that's been in the family for a long, long time. So how do we deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, I am not an unsentimental person. In fact, like, I throughout my life have had all sorts of collections and, you know, just objects that were important to me. I mean, I went to graduate school for a program that was, you know, for all intents and purposes, like a museum studies program. And so I really understand it.
Oh my goodness.
This idea of objects being, you know, filled with meaning. And there are certainly objects in my home that are filled with meaning, and that things like in our tiny apartment, as an example, like we have this, these two dressers and a headboard, and the headboard couldn't fit any apartment, so we were lucky enough that it was able to fit in a shed at my mom and dad's house, so that lived there while we were in that apartment. But we had these two dressers, which really didn't make sense in the apartment, to be honest. It would have made so much more sense to have like a big vertical shelf where we could have, you know, stored things kind of going up instead of having this like bulky dresser that was short and then you couldn't put anything on top of it. Like, they didn't really make sense from a design perspective or from like a space efficiency perspective. They were sentimental. Like, they were these dressers that we bought in North Carolina when we were in our first apartment, and I painted them and they matched this headboard that was from my mom and dad's house, like kind of by magic, and the whole, like, I just love these dressers and I wasn't going to get rid of them. And so we had them in our small apartment, even though they didn't make sense, really. So in that sense, like, they were there for sentimental reasons. But in terms of, like, I don't know, I guess there's just a limit to those things that I have. Like, the dressers are definitely that way, but the kitchen table that we had gotten in North Carolina, we tried to move it into that apartment on the first day that we were in Brooklyn, and it didn't fit. And so we put it out on the sidewalk that day. And then later on that afternoon, we went for a walk. And I kid you not, there was another kitchen table that someone else had put out on the sidewalk that did fit. So brought in. And now I have this sentimental attachment to that table, which I now use as my desk. But you know, like, the one table, there was, I could let that go and bring in something else. So, I mean, I think there's this kind of, like, ebb and flow. And to some extent, I also think that, and I read about this a little bit in my book, that there are some things that the story is really more important than the thing. So you can eventually let go of the actual thing, but you can tell the story. And that might happen with these dressers eventually. Who knows? You know, like, I might be telling my grandchildren about these dressers that we found for $35 in North Carolina that I painted and lived with in this tiny apartment, and now they're somewhere else. And I think that that's okay. I mean, I think, honestly, the reason that objects are important is because they're humanizing, in the sense that we tell stories about them. And as we, if we keep the story, then we can let go of the thing. So that's what I've done to some extent with things. But also for me, like, it is more important to kind of have, like, I hate being in a cluttered space. I hate that feeling of there being excess. And so that always trumps sentimentality for me.
Okay. For me, as you're talking about this, I'm sort of thinking about the fact that sometimes objects serve as reminders, you know, so we tell this, you can keep the story, which is beautiful. I really love that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's definitely the goal. But then there's all these other things that remind you of a situation or a person or a time that you may otherwise forget about. Yeah. So I guess that's maybe the fear that people have. And maybe just it needs a different form of documenting, perhaps like journaling or something.
I don't know. I mean, it's going to be different for each person. It's definitely a personal thing. And, you know, I don't know, to some extent, I have less trouble with clutter that's meaningful than clutter that's not meaningful. So I feel like a lot of the problem stuff is not stuff that's really important to people. It's more stuff that isn't.
I mean, you know what, too? What you said, I really loved what you said, that objects that, you know, it's not the things that you really love that bother you. It's all that excess. I mean, that is so true. I mean, when you rethink about it, it's just, I mean, it's very, very true. But what I've noticed in my personal life as I've tried to, you know, to go through a process similar to yours, minus the super small space living, is that as you get rid of things, that introduces a sense of freedom. And then the more you do it, the more you become addicted to that. And then those things that you thought you loved, it slowly, you know, your attachment to those things slowly release.
Yeah.
So it's a process for sure. It doesn't happen overnight, I would say.
Right. I agree with that. And I think that also once you begin the process, if you quell the amount of things coming in, then you have less that you need to get rid of. I mean, I think that that's an interesting element that gets left out of the conversation about kind of purging or paring down, or it's like all of this stuff, like, where is it going?
Mm-hmm.
Who's doing it? I think that the important thing is to kind of stop the process, the influx, more than it is to even get rid of what we have. Because I think it all comes down to being purposeful. I think it all comes down to kind of living, I mean, this is like kind of an eye roll word, but like to living with intention, you know, like you want to like be intentional about the things that you bring in and the things that you use and the things that you enjoy. And I think the problem is not necessarily, you know, having things that we, you know, being overwhelmed with things that we love and use. Like, I'm not sure that anyone is suffering from that as much as they're suffering from having things that they don't love and don't use.
Of course. I mean, that's so true. I definitely think about that influx. And for me, what I do is I think about the life cycle of something and what's going to happen to that item when I'm finished with it. And sort of, you know, that in itself stops the influx more than anything else, at least for me.
Totally. I think that's absolutely something that that has kind of informed, you know, our choices for years now. You know, when we were first, you know, and again, sorry, this is like fresh because I was just writing about it, but when we were first living together in our first apartment, which was our first apartment together, but also our first like adult, a real adult apartment for either one of us, you were kind of like, you know, you need everything. We had nothing. We had a mattress, you know, on the floor and like our suitcases. And so as we went about kind of making these purchases, we were really kind of struck by the idea that we were responsible for those things. And like everything has a story before it even like, before it even gets to you. So there's like the production of that thing and the waste that even happens before you even decide to get rid of something, there's waste all along the production line too. So from a very like environmental kind of perspective, thinking about what goes into producing something, you know, it's important to think about. It's a reason why a lot of the things that we own are vintage or secondhand, like kind of thinking about starting fresh when there's so much that already exists is something that's definitely informed our purchasing habits.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's like that, those little videos that were released, it feels like a little while ago now, but the story of stuff, you know, like where they would like tell the story in like a stop motion video or something like that. I'm trying to remember now, but I remember it being super striking about, you know, this is what goes into producing paper or your cell phone. it's very crazy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you kind of sort of answered this a little bit already, but I think it's an important concept, so I wanted to bring a little more attention to it.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I love about your approach to creating a home is that you've maintained a sense of style, but you don't hide the blemishes. In fact, you talk about them a lot. So like your bathroom right now that you really don't enjoy.
Right.
Yeah, but there's, you know, there's still an inherent beauty in your home that inspires people to achieve the same feeling of zen, of minimalism, and organization, which I think is important because that's a method of spreading your message. But in a world where we're trained to always want the latest or just more, you know, how do you navigate the pull of wanting beautiful things but not letting yourself give in to the temptation of a regular basis?
Yeah. Part of it comes from just, you know, on one hand, it's, I don't have this huge, like, consumer impulse, so I'm not necessarily always wanting the newest thing, just kind of as a person, you know, as, like, and I feel like it's kind of just like an inborn trait or whatever, but I do love beautiful things, I really do, and there are certainly things in my house that I would swap out for something different if I, you know, given the opportunity, that's for sure. But I think it's also, to some extent, I mean, you can't spend other people's money, you know, you never know, like, how people finance their lives, but to some extent, at this stage in our life, you know, we've spent money on things like experiences like education and living in a city that costs a lot of money, and so there's not really a lot of extra money to spend on those things. And so kind of being comfortable with that and saying, you know, like, I would rather not be in debt than have a new couch.
But one of the areas where I'm sort of imagining this is probably the hardest is in your closet.
Mm.
Because with clothing in particular, the changing of seasons, changing of fashion, always wanting the latest, I mean, that to me is where resisting the pull is the toughest. So how do you approach, you know, have you avoided this and how do you approach your closet more generally?
Well, I would say that to some extent it's the way I approach home goods, in that I have set up for myself these kind of like impossible standards, which means that a lot of things that I would love are just like inaccessible to me right now because of like very practical things, like not being able to afford them necessarily. So when I, you know,
yeah, me too.
I don't want to buy anything that's not kind of handmade or made with natural fibers or that's not going to last for a very long time. Like I set up these kind of goals of like what I would love to celebrate and spend my money on, and if it's something that comes with a price tag that I can't buy, then I just won't buy anything. That's kind of, I mean, to be honest, like, it pains me to, like, go into a store and see something that is still quite pricey, but when you look at the tag, like, you realize that it's made with synthetic fibers, and it's made in factory conditions that are questionable, and, you know, all sorts of people are probably being exploited to make that thing. Like, that is $60 or $70 that I would rather not spend than have something new. And I might not necessarily be able to afford very much or anything that is made kind of with standards that are more exacting, but then I would, like, literally rather wear the same t-shirt again. And so, I mean, I think that that's a lot of how I have so few clothes. Like, I just decide not to buy anything that doesn't kind of meet these very high standards that I've set.
Okay, so, but you have to have some clothes. So, yeah. You know, like, first of all, I'm in the same boat as you. I haven't bought clothes in a really long time outside of a, you know, a cute secondhand place that I feel okay getting stuff from.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm just like, I really want to invest in quality, but quality is not within my reach, right? Like, that's not quite true, but, you know, in many cases,
yeah,
the level of quality and craftsmanship that I'm after is just is not in my scope.
Right.
So it sounds like you just are patient and willing to sort of maybe save for those key things that will last you for a really long time.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's kind of like practiced patience. It's kind of like, and procrastination, even more than patience. Like, to make that sound quite as, you know, like I have some kind of superpower. Like, it's really more like, oh, you know, I'm just gonna, you know, I read this post about how I really don't like my, I have two winter coats and I really don't love them. They're like not perfect and they make me feel frumpy, and so many people kind of weighed in. And what was fascinating is, like, so many people were like, oh, keep us up to date, you know, on what you decide to buy. And it's like, oh my God, there's no way I'm buying anything new this winter. Like, it's just not happening. Because I know that, like, I won't be able to make a decision about it. So I'll, like, keep on wearing the same old coat. So to some extent, like, I feel like some of it really has to do with, like, indecisiveness and procrastination more than a kind of, like, amazing ability to save up and then buy the perfect thing. So I think to some extent that's my answer. But I also, like, I definitely have a job, like, right now I'm, you know, in a t-shirt and jeans. And I don't have anywhere, like, to be today. I'm talking to you without video on. Like, you know, like, I'm just kind of, like, simply dressed. And I mean, I'm not, like, a real clothes horse, and I totally understand, like, and in fact admire people who are really able to, like, look super pulled together all the time, and I'm not really one of those people. But I also feel like, you know, getting, like, the, like, a t-shirt that fits well and jeans that fit well and being able to kind of just go with that, like, that's fine for me right now, and I definitely have a job where that's a possibility.
Yeah, that's true.
So I don't know. I mean, I guess that's how I do it. I just kind of stick to the old t-shirt and jeans routine.
Well, me too. So it's a good policy. I'm gonna go with that for sure. So, you know, but then that sort of led me to another question that I want to ask you, is that, you know, when you do have to buy something, mm-hmm, it sounds like you have a process, mm-hmm, that you go through.
Yeah.
And so what are the, you know, I guess, you know, your blog is so full of carefully curated objects that you have personally tried yourself. But with all of, you know, with many, many products out there,
yeah,
you have to buy them or own them temporarily to try them, right? Even things that you don't like. So what are your requirements that you try to meet before you purchase new items or accept a gift or you know, and sometimes you get things from sponsors or whatever. So, you know, what are those requirements look like for you?
Yeah, totally. I mean, well, first of all, let me just say that it is so hard. I mean, that's the bottom line. Like, it is really hard to find the, like, forget saving up for it, forget being patient, like, love that you, like, want to wear day in and day out. Like, that is hard work, and it definitely takes some, you know, I don't know, I have not found, like, definitely, like, the perfect secret. I mean, I definitely do, I am looking always for, I, like, feel more comfortable in natural fibers. I mean, I like sweat like a pig when I'm wearing polyester or, you know, like synthetic fibers. And I just find that the clothes, they wear out more easily. And then I'm like so sad that I spent money on something that, you know, doesn't kind of make it through the wash. Like that is like devastating to me. So I definitely try to really look at, you know, fabrics and that kind of thing. And it is just, there is such this, like, satisfaction in buying something from someone who you know, like, I'll use the example of Sadie from Tradlands, which is this beautiful company in the U.S. that makes button-downs for women, and having, like, interactions with her and knowing the kind of work that she's put into sourcing the fabric and the buttons and, you know, how the buttonholes are going to be constructed and all of that, like, knowing the love and attention that has gone into that, making that thing, and then being able to support her business and share the story of her business with people, you know, who read my blog or whatever, like, that is just so satisfying. It's so great to be able to feel like you are part of a community, like a system. And I think like human beings crave that to some extent. Like, it's just like this natural human thing to feel like we are all connected. And so if I can make purchasing decisions that also contribute to that same sense, like what a joy that is. Like, then those things actually become like meaningful in a different way than going into a store and buying a button-down shirt that might on the face of it look somewhat similar, but not have that same kind of backstory. Like, I love knowing the story of my clothes. And I mean, this, talk about being being sentimental, you know, like, or being like attached to objects. Like, in some ways I actually feel like I'm more attached to things than someone else, you know, might be. That like, it is not for want of liking things that I have left with them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I mean, I think, you know, what's happened is that you've boiled the things that you own down to the point where each thing that you own has become a part of your life. And so then there is that sentimentality. Yeah. So no, that was a great answer. And I'm imagining that that can apply across everything from toiletries to home decor, kitchen things. Like it is about that story, about the craftsmanship, the quality, all of those things.
Yeah.
For sure.
I think like, to some extent, I actually have to get a little bit better at like practicing, like, how to say this. Because I don't make a lot of purchases and because I'm kind of careful about what I accept as, you know, as gifts or as things that I buy or whatever, like when those things don't work out, I feel so like shocked, you know, like darn it, I really wanted that one hat that I have. And then I realize like it's not the hat, like I just don't love the way it makes my ears look, or I just, you know, it like falls too much forward on my head or whatever it is. Like getting over that for me is like more difficult or something, because I just kind of like always want to be able to make like the one decision, but that's kind of impractical, you know, like it's hard to find the one perfect something, you know, which is probably why I have like too many shoes.
Something tells me that you probably don't. But I hear what you're saying for sure. So I wanted to transition a little bit and talk about kids, babies.
Sure.
You have a little girl, Faye, who you said is 9 months.
Yeah.
And, you know, I personally, when I first became a mother, felt really repelled by the amount of things that people think babies need. Like, I didn't even want a baby shower, although when I got one, I was extremely grateful and I loved it. But, you know, I just didn't think that you needed all of this stuff. And, you know, albeit I will admit that getting out of the house with a baby in cloth diapers did make for a much bulkier bag, and I did need to have some stuff in that department, but... You know, for the most part, I really resisted stuff. And I have to admit, I got angry with myself because I did kind of cave sometimes because I felt like I wasn't providing her with enough or whatever. So I would go on, you know, our version of Craigslist,
yeah,
which is called Kijiji in Canada, and find some, like, a used lot of toys. And then I was like, she didn't even play with those. And I was just, like, annoyed with myself. You know, so I've bought almost nothing new,
yeah,
with the exception of a crib mattress and bedding because it had to be organic.
Uh-huh.
But I really, honestly, I hardly needed anything once I figured out the basics. And so, you know, I wanted to know how you approach minimalism and parenting.
Yeah.
Is it sort of similar or do you, yeah, well, what is your,
yeah,
what's your thoughts there?
I mean, I have to say, first of all, I like owe a huge debt of gratitude to my sister, who also lives in the city, who also lives in a tiny apartment, who also has a baby and who is my big sister. And so she did it all before me.
Nice.
I totally, you know, see, kind of follow in her footsteps and realize, you know, like, okay, I don't need this stuff either. Like if she didn't go that route, then I can probably also not go that route. You know, I did do things like I didn't have a baby shower. And I didn't have a baby shower because I really didn't want stuff. I didn't even really think of it as being, I kind of forget, or I don't really think of myself as being unconventional. Like, I don't think of my approach as being particularly unusual, I guess, until I kind of realize, you know, you go into someone else's house or most often I'm kind of posed questions. Like, I'll get email readers or reader emails, you know, asking me, you know, about how I navigated something or other, and I kind of realized, like, oh God, I never even thought of that. So I don't know. I mean, I guess it's unusual, but to me, it just seemed kind of normal to kind of make do without until I realized I needed something. But yeah, it's true. You know, we have a crib and a mattress. We have a box of toys. We did bring home at Christmas time a vintage high chair that was James's when he was a baby, which I have to say has been really awesome to have. My sister didn't have a high chair because they have a fairly large kitchen table in a very small apartment, and it just made more sense for them to use one of those little like strap-on things that you strap to the chair and the baby kind of goes in it. So my nephew just kind of sat on a regular chair instead of in the high chair. And we didn't go that route because we do have a little bit of room. So we had the high chair and it's been awesome. I totally don't regret that, bringing that into our apartment. But in general, like if you walked into our house, you know, I'm looking around today and there is one little wooden caterpillar thing on the floor right now. That was Faye's. But other than that, and seeing the high chair in the corner, you wouldn't really think that there was a baby living here. Which doesn't mean I don't love my baby. It just means I don't want my house to be like overflowing with stuff for the baby. So I think that's just kind of how I've taken it, just like one step at a time. And yeah, I just don't feel like we just haven't needed a lot of stuff. We haven't needed nearly, you know, when I look at lists of like baby must-haves, like more than half of them just are things that we haven't needed. And so we've made do. I don't know.
Now, I mean, I think what you said about waiting to figure out what you need is really important. So mm-hmm. I think so much of parenting is you put a lot of thought. You're anticipating this baby for 9 months and maybe and like probably a lot longer because there's, you know, there's the wanting a baby phase too before you even get pregnant.
Right.
And so it's a long road leading up to your baby finally arriving. And so that's a lot of time to dream about all the things you want and think about what you need. And it's sort of you anticipate your needs as opposed to reacting to what you need the same way you do in the rest of your life. So I think that's a really key point for sure, because you do start to realize that, all this gear is kind of, A, it's so short-lived, it wasn't worth the money, or it just, you know, the importance of it slips away in favor of other things. I think that's a really important approach.
Right. And I mean, I also think to some extent it was, again, like, it was more important for me to live in an apartment that we could afford, in a neighborhood that we loved, than to have, like, a two-bedroom apartment, you know, that would mean, like, James's commute to school was twice as long or whatever. Like, there were, so it was more important for me to have less stuff in a smaller apartment than to have a bigger apartment where I could fit more stuff. Like, it was just a priority kind of for me, like a question of priority a little bit.
One of the questions, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but one of the questions that I just want to interject because it comes to mind is that, you know, my little girl is 2 now and I'm finding that as she's growing, she's accumulating more stuff.
Right.
Because she's forming her own attachments to things. And so as Faye grows, how will you handle that? Like, how will you teach or influence her when she starts to desire her own possessions?
You know, I think I have a kind of old-fashioned notion that, like, I'm a parent, and so I'm gonna, to some extent, like, it's my responsibility to put a stop to some of the accumulation. Like, some of it, I just think, like, there's, it makes sense to maintain some amount of control. And I'm going to try to, for instance, even already, like, she's been given, you know, we have all of her toys in just one little box right now. And surely, like, she hasn't had a first birthday yet, you know? So who knows what kind of things she'll get. But I think that kids don't need that much. And I think that, in fact, we do them a disservice by giving them too much. So I think that if she was suddenly given 20 toys tomorrow, like, I wouldn't bring all those toys into our house. I would either put some of them away for it to introduce later on, or I would give them away to, you know, a thrift store or whatever. Like, I just think that new parents, like, often have this sense that things are out of their control, when really, like, I think if you want to control it, you can. Like, you can say that, you know, 8 rattles is too many rattles, so we're not going to have 8 rattles, like, or we're not going to have, you know, 15 sets of blocks or, 25 stuffed animals or whatever it is. And I think, like, part of that, like, if you introduce less, then the attachment will form to less. I don't know. I've been really struck by, have you read the book Simplicity Parenting?
I haven't, no.
It's really great. It's just this, I mean, it just has this kind of philosophy that says that, you know, kids are overwhelmed and that we can help them out by not giving them as many options. And I think in the same way that adults are overwhelmed by too many options, you know, kids are. And so having just kind of introducing fewer things to her, I think will help her to kind of, you know, love the things that she does have. And hopefully not, you know, grow attached to 20 stuffed animals that need to be stored in, like, a crib of their own, you know? That's my hope. I mean, and who knows? Like, if there's anything you learn as a parent, it's, like, never say always and never say never, because you don't know what's going to happen. And certainly we're going to roll with the punches.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, in general, my philosophy is to introduce less and to try to, you know, maintain control for as long as I can. And, you know, if like, I don't know, if she's at a friend's house and she's playing with, you know, plastic light-up toys, like, is she gonna like that toy? Yeah, probably. Like, she'll probably love it, you know? But it doesn't mean I'm necessarily gonna buy that toy for her or bring it into our house. But I also, you know, wouldn't, like, not allow her to play with it somewhere else, you know? I think that there's just kind of, you have to, like, have some, set some parameters for your own comfort level for what you give your kid, and then understand that you can't control everything, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right, of course. I think that understanding of controlling things is really important. But then, you know what, I'm really glad that you said that kids don't need a lot of stuff, because I just think, I mean, it's really true, but it also reminds me of an article that I read once, and to me, it was the most important piece of reading I did so far as being a mom, and that it was all about how the key to happiness is saying no. And you read it and you're like, what? You know, like, oh, I'm going to read about this.
Yeah.
And basically the premise of it is that if a child is always, you know, it's like that whole theory that you can't know happiness without knowing sadness. And you can't know abundance without knowing scarcity or whatever. You mean that concept, it goes on and on. It's infinite. And just with kids, and I think with people generally, is that if you are told yes to everything and that everything is just so transient and feels so easy, then you feel very little gratitude. And, you know, and it's just that being told no just makes all the times that you're told yes so much sweeter.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. And I also think that some of it comes from I'm going to sound so fringy now, but like we're being sold the idea that we need these things. Like it is an effort to sell products to us, you know, like we don't need it. Like you know, a kid doesn't need like 10 quote unquote educational toys to like become a smart functioning human. Like,
yeah.
Smart functioning humans like build block towers. Like that's also using like brain skills, you know? Like I just feel like so much of the things that people think they need is like a direct result of marketing. And it's like okay to decide that that's not a choice that you want to make. And it's, you know, which is not to say that I think other people can't make that choice. But it is about, I guess that's the bottom line. Like it is a choice. You either, you can do it or you don't do it, but you don't have to do it. Like there's, you don't need everything that people tell you that you need.
No, of course. And there's also that idea that if you have less, you take care of your possessions much better.
Right, totally.
One stuffed animal versus 20 means you're going to love that one so much more.
And you know, that's the thing that is, because again, it like does come back to, you know, again, like not to sound like so hippy dippy, but like it comes back to like stewardship of our planet, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't want to contribute to a landfill. Like I don't want to have plastic toys in our house that have been like made using processes that have a tremendous amount of waste that then also will end up like broken and in a landfill somewhere else. Like I think I can do better than that. And so I'm going to try, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that answer. So we are running a little bit out of time. So I wanted to switch gears a little bit and talk about your very exciting project, which is your new book. It's called Simple Matters. So I was hoping you could talk to us a little bit about that too.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, on some level, you know, of course it's kind of a play on words. So it's about simple things, like simple matters in your life. But it's also this idea that simplicity matters, you know, that kind of taking a simple approach matters, that there are implications that reach beyond our own homes, that, you know, whether it's decluttering your house or the way that you clean your house or the food that you eat, like all of it matters. And it's simple stuff. Like it's, on some level, it's kind of about basic homemaking, you know? So it's about decorating your house and clothing yourself and getting dressed in the mornings, like simple, simple things. But doing those things simply, you know, has implications that are important. So it's, you know, it's kind of a, it's written with an environmental perspective. It's written from the perspective that less is more, but that it's also, you know, having less and living simply is a practical approach and a purposeful approach. So that there's like, it's not just, you know, choosing, to scrub your dishes, you know, your cast iron pan with like a, you know, natural brush is like not just like a beautiful, you know, idea, but it also means that you're producing less waste and you have fewer pots and pans and you know, it's about making food for your family. So it's just kind of about like simple things in life. And it's about choices. So it's kind of some of the stuff that I've done over the past, you know, gosh, I'm getting old, but you know, like 8 years since I've kind of lived on my own and made my way like as an adult, like trying to kind of parse or, you know, like kind of think through some of that stuff, the choices that I've made and the implications that they have. And it's personal, you know, it's about my own perspective. But the idea that, you know, we don't need that much stuff and that even some of the simple decisions that we have to make on a daily basis are important.
It sounds amazing. I can't wait to read it. It's sort of like an introduction to your lifestyle and how to introduce it to your own life as well.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So it's answering questions that I haven't necessarily been able to answer on my blog. You know, I do receive so many questions about things and it kind of runs the gamut from like, how do you, you know, the kind of big picture things to like very, very specific things. Like, what deodorant are you wearing? And I think that like, it kind of just is proof that like, we're all searching for answers. And so hopefully it gives a few answers, but it also hopefully gives people the space, to kind of make their own decisions and yeah, like we're all kind of in this journey together, like figuring out how to be responsible humans on a beautiful planet.
And well, it sounds, I mean, again, I totally love the idea, the concept, and I'm so thankful that you're out there spreading this message. So I just want to sort of extend my gratitude to you for doing that, especially because there's that element of sustainability and stewardship to it,
yeah.
Which, you know, I just think is so, so important. So readers can expect that in January 2016, I think I read. Is that right?
That is right.
Was there anything else that you wanted to add or sort of leave our listeners with?
No, I don't think so. I'm sure I have like rambled on for far too long. I've written myself too many times already, but
no.
Yeah, and thank you so much for chatting with me. And it's nice to be able to just kind of talk out loud about some of the things that I'm writing about and still, you know, grappling with myself.
So that concludes my talk with Erin. Please share this episode with anyone you know who craves a little more simplicity. You'll find the show notes over at puregreenmag.com/podcast/Erin. And be sure to visit Erin's blog if you never have before at readingmytealeaves.com. We love conversation, so if you have any comments about Erin's interview and lifestyle, share it with us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/puregreenmag or leave a review over on iTunes. I know I've said it before, but in the land of podcasting, this is one of the best ways to ensure growth for a podcast. So please take 5 minutes and know that I'm super grateful. This podcast is created by Pure Green Magazine. Go to puregreenmag.com to subscribe to our print magazine. We've got a new issue coming up that we can't wait to share. And of course, follow along with the beautiful content we share weekly. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next week.